The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions.
Okay, so goal is to finish the seventh parak today. So I let's reread it, and then I decided to, I don't know if you want to call it cheating or not, but I looked at the art school footnotes to, yeah.
In the Gemara.
To bring in
to
bring in like the additional Mepharshim, because we tried looking at Rashi yesterday and couldn't find anything. So let's just read it again. Misha halach b'skora upasko lav anshe ha'ir shahalach sham tzedaka. Someone who goes on business to another place and the people in the city that he's going to levy a tzedaka tax on him. He gives it to the people, to the poor of that city. And if they are many, meaning if there are many people who go to this other city to do business and they levy a tax on them, then the people give it to the gabayim, and then when the people come back to their hometowns, mivim osa imahem, they bring the money with them. Give it to the people in their own city. And so our question was, what's the point in the people collecting it if they're just going to give it back? And if it's for chashad, so then how does this get out of the chashad? Like, you know, they could still get out of the tzedakah. Okay, so footnote guy in our scroll says, so we did the Gemara yesterday, which is the same thing. So it says, town officials are authorized to tax the community to raise charity funds and to force individuals to pay the amounts for which they were assessed. A visitor of less than 30 days, which is a new fact, okay, which is just in terms of like how long this is going on, who intends to return to his home, cannot be forced to contribute. Nevertheless, if the town officials did levy such a tax against him, he is subject to the rules set forth here. Okay, so that's why the Ram, that's explaining one thing that we didn't really notice. That's why the Ram said, he didn't say the word im, but like the question is like, if they did this, if they charged him with this tax, then he has to pay it. But it doesn't mean that they have to. Okay. It's just something that they did. Okay. Next fact. So the Gemara said, so they should give the assessed amount. Okay. And footnote 39, this is what we did in Rashi. Although they're not obligated to contribute and ultimately their contributions will be refunded, they should nevertheless comply lest people suspect them of not paying charity taxes. So I think we were thinking of it that people will suspect them of like not doing their mitzvah tzedakah. This is making it clear that people will suspect them of just like getting out of the charity taxes that they should be taxed when they're in the city, you know? So everyone has to go through the motions of giving the taxes to the people in the city, even if it's going to be returned to them, because you don't want to have people having exceptions, you know, in terms of like not giving money. So that makes more sense than what we had yesterday, okay. I think. Yeah. And then this last part, I think, is also in line with what we did yesterday, which is Ukashin Bayin. Oh, we'd rather, sorry. This is the Brisa now. Oh, so the Brisa is the one that clarified for an individual. If an individual went to another town and they taxed him for charity, then it should be given to the poor of that town. So it quotes a Meiri. In fact, we could just look at the Meiri instead of relying on the art scroll. What?
It seems I'm hearing that the Gemara is not prone to tax exemptions.
Except for all the stuff that says Talmid Chachamim don't have to pay certain taxes. Megillah 27a, Meiri. I assume this is the Meiri here. Or not. Oh, here we go. B'nei ha'ir, shehim rabim shalchu li'ir acher, su pasko aleim tzedaka nosnim osa liyad gabai ha'ir, shlo yichashtu b'nodirin v'ena nosnim. That must be a phrase. So people don't expect them of being nodir and not giving. B'achar kach, because I think we're going to see later on that it's the form of a neder, I think. I don't know what mechanism they use to tax, though. V'achar kach chozrin v'nosnim osa, mehem, then they could take it back, letzorach aniye iram, to give it to the people in their city. V'shuv ein bahem chashad, achar shehi frishuha. See, that's clarifying also. Then there's no chashad since they separated it. V'al yachid shalach le'ir acheres, upasku alav tzedaka, batel hu eitzel hamakom. That's a weird phrase. But a yachid who goes to a city, and they levy a tax on him for tzedaka, he's batel vis-a-vis the makom. V'tzidkaso omedes l'sham kishar tzedaka. Dakaso, I don't know how you, his tzedakah, doesn't mean his righteousness, stands there like the other tzedakos, shel b'nei osa ha'ir, like the other people in the city. V'rabim sh'amru yesh, v'rabim sh'amru, so the rabim that they said, yesh parshu ad asara, so some say, so we read in the Ravaz, it's the majority of the people. Here he's saying, some explain it that it's up to 10. Hayav osa makam, sh'nadru l'sham, sh'nadru l'shem chacham, Hamis Asik, no, no, this has got to be a different thing. All right, let's just go back to the summary here. So he says, in contrast to the contributions of a group of visitors, the donation of an individual visitor is not refunded when he leaves town. Rather, his contribution is distributed to the local poor. An individual perforce becomes subordinate to the public. That's what it means, he's batal to the makom. Whereas a group retains a separate identity. Some say the 10 people are needed to constitute a group. What was that?
What's perforce?
Of necessity, I guess. Yeah. You mean, could the people... it sounds like you, from the previous halakhas we read, that they do have a responsibility to their own city first. Right? So it sounds like they should take it back and then give it to the people at home. Right?
I know, subject
to the Aruch HaShulchan's thing, that the Aruch HaShulchan says, like, ultimately, it doesn't mean you only fill up one tier and then go to the other tier. Like, you know, like, let's say these people are giving tzedakah to the people at home through their non-business funds. So then, yeah, they could give it to the city, presumably. Yeah, like, if they give it the money back to you, so you can do what you want with it. No, I don't think so. You could probably give it to the buying. I don't see why you'd have to. Yeah, what were you saying, Akiva?
I was just saying it's like a toll almost.
It's like a what?
Thing like a toll.
Yeah, right. Stock a toll. Yeah.
Are there also selling like that? So I'm giving you the sound like more like how community leaders should collect their stock at.
Yeah, it is. It sounds more like what rights the city has to collect taxes. But with Chaim's question, I think that still is a question of like, how do you prioritize, like, what agency do you have when they give it back to you about agency or obligation do you have about supporting your own hometown? Yeah.
For some of my mind, I was assuming that they were just giving it to the city's authorities, not giving it to you.
Yeah.
I think they're giving it to you.
Why?
I thought they're giving it.
Wasn't that tomorrow?
Let's see. I think we read it in Rashi. Right, Rashi. They, the business people, demand it from the gabayim. Right. So they. It sounds like the people, the businessmen, get it back. Not that it goes.
It doesn't seem like there's more gabayim in the lachon.
It doesn't sound like there's one.
I mean, I'm saying it sounds more like that than you're just in the tomorrow. That you're giving it to the business owners, not.
Yeah. How did the Gemara say it? They bring it with them. Yeah. Right. They bring it with them. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty clear. Okay. Okay, so I think that takes. Oh, then we just said if there's a chavir, then he could distribute it however he wants. Okay, last halacha. Omer tenuma saim dinar lebeis hakneses. So if a guy says, give $200 to the shul, okay? Oh, tenu sefer Torah lebeis hakneses, or donate a sefer Torah to the shul. Yeah. Yitnu lebeis hakneses shehu ragil bo. They should give it to the beis hakneses that he frequents, okay? So I guess the case is where he didn't specify which one to give it to. I saw someone in the Chabad.org footnotes, they said, it must be he's on his deathbed, you know, because otherwise you would just ask him, like, which one did you mean, you know? Unless you get into, like, Nedarim halachas about, like, who did he obligate himself to, but that doesn't seem to be the approach he's taking. Also, it's, I mean, maybe you could say it's...
What?
The Lashon doesn't seem to express it that way, right? It sounds like it's a matter of figuring out what his kavana was, as opposed to what he obligated himself in. Like the Makpili says, let me just finish reading the halakha verse. Bimhayu ragil b'shnayim, if he goes to two shuls, yitnu l'shnayim, they should give to both of them. Haomer tenu masayim dinar la'aniyim, if he says give 200 dinar to the poor, yitnu la'aniyei osa ha'ir, you give it to the poor of that city. Okay, so let's look at Makbile and then we'll take questions. So Yitnu the basic anessa shu ragibosh nira, she's kavin lazeh. So it seems like he intended for that. Yitnu lishnehem, give it to both of them. In bar im hakavana shi kabul kul echem nehem machatiso. It's not clear whether each of the shuls gets half. She's kalku, what?
Half a Torah?
No. then that's equal to no Torah. Half of the 200 dinar. She's kalku b'shim, sorry. Oh, no, you're right. She's chalku b'shim sefer Torah of Gedama, and they split the use of the sefer Torah, not the sefer Torah itself. Like they share it.
I understand it's a Ryan that it means.
Yeah. Well, the money they would actually split, but then if it's a sefer Torah, then you can't split that, so they share it. You know.
I'm trying to bring in Ryan that they don't split it.
That they don't split it.
Well,
because from the fact that you can't split the sefer Torah.
Sefer Torah is like sitting there splitting a cow, where you sell it and whatever, or he says he gives like half of the amount of a sefer Torah to each shul.
Right, but you can't sell a sefer Torah, right?
Oh, right. Why did you not be able to sell for shul maintenance?
Well, I don't remember the laws. Let's look at it after this. Or you give the entire sum to both of them, meaning like you have to buy two Sefer Torah and give one to each. Yeah. So I think we can agree that the kavana here, that the case here is where you don't know what the guy meant and there's no way to find out. Right. The guy died, or let's say like he puts him in charge of his funds and you can't contact the guy. So really quickly, let's just look at the halachas of selling a Sefer Torah, I think are in Hilchos Sefer Torah or Tefillah. I think it's in Hilchos Tefillah for some reason. Yeah,
I don't know.
You can only purchase it.
Selling it after you own.
I think there's limitations.
There are limitations, but the base finesse, use of base finesse as one of those.
Yeah, I thought you went through all those there, but that we did last year, but let's see. Ahava, Tfil Birkas Konim. Okay, let's see. This is Mutra Lasos, basic analysis, base midrash. Thank you. So let's read the whole halacha. Actually, let's read it in the Gud Rambam. Yud Aleph 14.
You don't want to read it.
This is not a doofus. Michal Mamre is not a doofus.
Oh, no.
It's just this one is going to bring down all the Girsaos, and this one relies on the Yemenite manuscripts over the Rambam's own, over the one based on the Rambam's own handwriting. And the Yemenite manuscripts are not reliable in terms of they're not uniform. The facts are, when Yemen got the manuscripts, they sent they commissioned three copies from the Rambam, and they got three copies that went to Yemen, and the three copies are not internally consistent with each other. And so the way that Rav Shelah decides between them is, if you have the one that is based on what the Rambam signed off on versus the Yemenite manuscripts, you rely on the one that the Rambam signed off on, whereas Kafak will rely on the Yemenite manuscripts, and he'll even rely on Yemenite minhag over the Rambam's own handwritten things. Yeah.
If the Rambam wasn't being redacted as Lashon, isn't that like as if he sent them three different?
Rambam didn't write them.
I thought you said that Rambam sent three different versions.
No, Rambam didn't send them. No. The Yemenite scribes went and commissioned three versions of the Mishnah, three copies of the Mishnah Torah. And then they had people write them out for them, and then they send them back. Rambam didn't write them in his own hand. Really quick thing. I really meant to go over this at the beginning of the year. Okay, so there's the Lahavdil, the Holy Grail of Mishnah Torahs, which we don't have, which is there's a copy that the Rambam wrote himself in his own handwriting, okay, in his own base midrash that he allowed people to come and copy from, okay? And that was the one he was constantly updating. We don't have that one, and we don't know what happened to it. But we can trace like certain speculations about it. Okay. Then there's what's called either the Sefer Hamuga or the Oxford. Oxford 577 Huntington 80. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
That is the version of the Mishneh Torah that was copied from the Rambam's handwritten Mishneh Torah. But we only have the Hagdama, Sefer Hamada, and Sefer Ava, and the Nusach HaTefillah from it, which is good. If you're going to lose any part of the Mishneh Torah, like, don't lose those, you know? And that is the most complete, accurate version that we have. And then the Yemenite, and that was copied by a Chacham, okay? We don't know who produced the Yemenite manuscripts. It could have just been copyists who just, like, wrote down copies. And the copies that went to Yemen are all internally inconsistent. So you've got two things going for you about the Oxford. One is that it was written based off of the Rambam's personal copy, and it was written by a Chacham, and it's also like, and also you don't have the pagam of like the internal inconsistencies in the three Yemenite ones. Yeah, all right. Well, this is a separate thing. Let's just read this thing. Okay. Mutter lasos base knesses base midrash. You can make a base knesses into a base midrash. About base hamidrash, inosin also the base of knesses. But you can't do the other way around. She kedusha base midrash yasir al kedusha base knesses. The kedusha of a base midrash is better, is greater than the one of base knesses. Umalim bekodesh v'lo meridin. We go up in kodesh, not down. V'chein b'nei ha'ir shemachru base knesses yesh lahen likach midamav teva. You could sell a base knesses to buy an ark. Mahru teva yeshlan likach b'demehab mitpachos otik o sefer Torah. With an ark, you can buy the coverings of the sefer Torah or the bag for the sefer Torah. Mahru mitpachas otik. If you sell the coverings or the bag, lochlin b'damav chumashin. You can buy chumashin, which are the like individual scrolls of Rishis, Shemos, etc. Mahru chumashin lochlin sefer Torah, and you can sell chumashin to buy a sefer Torah. Well, im mahru sefer Torah. In lochim b'dam of ella sefer Torah acher. Okay, you can only sell the sefer Torah to buy another sefer Torah. Shein sham kedusha lamala kedusha sefer Torah. V'chein b'mosrim. So that's what I was saying of splitting a sefer Torah. What are you going to gain from that, right? Like you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna sell the sefer Torah to buy, like to commission two other, like, you know, like so the sharing the sefer Torah is really the only viable solution, you know. Yeah. Or like, I mean, you could, I don't know, you could sell half of it and then like give it to them and say you could buy your own sefer Torah from them. Yeah, right. Yeah, fine.
Isn't that only in the Huntington and Shlomo?
I think
individual sell a sefer Torah.
I thought this was a thing in general from the Kedusha sefer Torah. Let's see. I thought so. I don't really know, but I thought those were. I thought this is even on an individual. I don't know though. Yeah,
Yosef. I guess if you say like, how is Sofer ease?
Well, the Sofer, I don't think is selling. I mean, is the Sofer selling the sefer Torah?
Money
yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not sure. I've never looked into that issue before.
Yeah. Also, yeah. It doesn't seem like it. He doesn't say anything about who you're selling. Like, do you have to sell it to another shul? Do you have to sell it to like,
seemingly,
you,
I was just, on the market? Like, I assume you could, yeah, I don't know about a non-Jew, but I assume you can sell it to you know, to anyone because you know, it's missed for every Jew to write or commission a sefer Torah. Yeah. Okay. So, Bli Neder, how many weeks do we have? Till Hanukkah.
Till?
Yeah, so just one, right?
Just one.
Yeah, right? Because Hanukkah, Yeshua's wedding is on the 26th, yeah, and that's the last day of Hanukkah. So Hanukkah, this should be good. So we can have, you know. No, we can't, right? And I'm saying, yeah. But I think Hanukkah took us a lot quicker than we thought when we did it 2 years ago. We'll see what happens this year, but we'll definitely do it. Yeah. Oh, that's true also. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we had many hours. Yeah.
If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeWeiss. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweiss Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is @Matt-Schneeweiss, and my Zelle/Chase QuickPay and PayPal are MattSchneeweiss@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor an article, shiur, or podcast episode, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at rabbishnewash@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening. Thank you to my readers for reading. And thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.